time. Stay tuned for Daybreak Africa coming up after these latest world news headlines.
I'm Ann Bald reporting. Three of the United States' top intelligence officials told U.S. lawmakers Tuesday that Russia intends to impact the 2018 U.S. midterm elections. Here's CIA Director Mike Pompeo.
Yes, we have seen Russian activity and intentions to have an impact on the next election cycle here.
The intelligence officials said they will share the information with state and local governments and election officials. Israeli police on Tuesday recommended indicting Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu for bribery in two criminal investigations, but the Israeli leader calls the allegations baseless. Robert Berger has details from Jerusalem.
Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu allegedly accepted nearly $300,000 in gifts from two Jewish billionaires, including cigars, cognac, and jewelry. Police say he also bargained with an Israeli newspaper publisher for more positive news coverage. In exchange, Netanyahu allegedly promised to advance the interests of his benefactors. Minutes after the police published their findings, Netanyahu went on national television to deny any wrongdoing. Robert Berger for VOA News, Jerusalem.
Ace Magashula, the Secretary General of South Africa's ruling party, says he does not know how President Jacob Zuma will respond to the party's declaration that he must leave office.
And we're looking forward to an amicable solution.
This is VOA News. The U.S. Director of National Intelligence, Dan Coats, warned on Tuesday that time was running out for the United States to act on the threat posed by North Korea's nuclear weapons program.
North Korea continues to pose an ever more increasing threat to the United States and its interests. Pyongyang has repeatedly stated that it does not intend to negotiate its nuclear weapons and missiles away.
The Trump administration in the past has stressed its preference for a diplomatic solution to the crisis, but it has also warned that all options are on the table, including military ones. South Korea approved on Wednesday the use of more than $2.5 million to bankroll the cost of hosting hundreds of North Koreans during the Pyeongchang Winter Olympics. The Ministry of Unification said the funds will pay for the costs, including accommodations and food, for North Korea's cheering squad, orchestra, taekwondo performers, journalists, and other supporting personnel who had visited or are still in South Korea. Combined, they make up a group of 424 North Koreans. Meanwhile, American Chloe Kim took home the gold in the snowboard halfpipe at the Winter Games. The 17-year-old is the youngest to do so. Residents of Tonga are cleaning up after tropical cyclone Gita ravaged the Pacific Island nation, even destroying the historic Parliament House. The winds exceeded 200 kilometers per hour on Monday night. The storm ripped trees out of the ground, tore roofs off houses and buildings, and knocked down power lines. It caused massive flooding in the capital and closed the international airport. Leveni Aho is Tonga's disaster management director.
The very thing that racing through my heart when I go through this morning, surely with this there must be people dead. I think that we are extremely, extremely lucky.
He says that because there were no reported deaths and no immediate reports of serious injuries either. The cyclone was intensifying and headed towards the southern Fiji Islands. The host nation for a summit of Western Hemisphere leaders has withdrawn its invitation to Venezuelan leader Nicolas Maduro over his country's plan to hold an early presidential election.
That's the latest world news from VOA.
Good morning, Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Barty in Washington. Today's Wednesday, February 14th, and here are some of the stories we are covering. Kenya's deported citizen wants to return to face what he calls trump-up charges, but first, he wants security assurances.
I insist that I should be able to go back to face these trumped-up charges, and I have to demand that they provide security because the hoodlums that kidnapped me can still do so if the court does not issue such an order.
Miguna Miguna is the deported lawyer for opposition leader Raila Odinga. Ugandan religious leaders say they will continue to discuss national affairs, including politics. There are reports South Sudan's revitalization forum going on in Addis Ababa is facing some challenges. And Sierra Leone's opposition National Grand Coalition issues a manifesto ahead of the March 7th presidential elections.
We are saying here in our compact that public servants would be accountable to all citizens and at all times. We are saying here in our compact to the people of Sierra Leone that our natural resources will be harnessed for sustainable development of the country for the benefit of all its citizens.
Suleiman Banja Tijanse is the campaign manager for presidential candidate Kande Yomkela. Guinea-Bissau residents decry recent deaths at the hands of Senegalese authorities along the two countries' shared border, and Gabonese conservationists deploy a new weapon to fight poaching. Those stories, plus our listener of the day, are coming up on Daybreak Africa. The deported lawyer for Kenyan opposition leader Raila Odinga is demanding security assurances to return to Kenya and face what he calls trump-up charges against him. Miguna Miguna, who administered the swearing-in of Raila Odinga as the so-called People's President, was deported to Canada last week because the Kenyan government says he holds a Canadian citizenship. The Kenyan High Court was scheduled to begin hearing Miguna's petition yesterday. This comes as Kenya's Attorney General resigned on Tuesday without explanation. From Canada, Miguna Miguna tells me he's not surprised by Attorney General Githu Muigai's resignation.
The Attorney General was not actually the Attorney General of Kenya. He was the Attorney General of Jubilee and was supposed to have been replaced a year ago. I think that he had reached a dead end even within Jubilee itself. Now I believe that because Uhuru Kenyatta has become an autocrat, he's going to have to surround himself with people who view the illegitimate presidency as a license to control everything and to mismanage governance, to oppress Kenyans, and to loot without any recourse to justice.
Let me ask you, Mr. Miguna, you were deported by your own country. Your case was to go to court. Bring us up to date.
First of all, I have to say it was not a deportation because a deportation is a judicial process that ends up by a court making a decision whether or not someone should stay or be forced out of the country. But you cannot, even under those circumstances, remove a citizen born in a particular country to an adopted country. I was born in Kenya. My ancestors, before I was born, had lived in Kenya for more than 500 years, maybe 1,000 years. So it defies reason why they would even call it a deportation. So that's number one. It's not a deportation. It's forceful relocation, just like the British used to do, the people who used to resist British occupation. Secondly, yes, the court proceeded to sit and to look into the matter and once again issued an order of contempt against the authorities that had abducted me, detained me without trial, disobeyed multiple court orders, abused me, then forced me out of the country.
You made certain demands. You want the government to pay the bills for your return back to Kenya, as well as provide you with security. Do you think the government can do that, particularly the security?
You see, if we are a country governed by the rule of law, and if we pretend that Kenya is a democracy and that the constitution is the supreme law in Kenya, and that the people sitting in Nairobi purporting to be the legitimate authority adhere to the rule of law, then that question would have to be answered by a court of law. once a court of law renders a decision or issues an order requiring them to do one or two things, they would have to comply. And in this case, the court has no option but to issue the order. Number one, the court will make negative inferences as to the behavior of the authorities because they defied the court more than seven times. Two, they purported to charge me with treason and with assisting Raila Odinga to commit treason, and also now are saying that I was in Kenya illegally. They took me to court before removing me forcefully. So one would have to say, why don't you want to present the man before a court of law so that you can find him guilty? So that once you find him guilty, then you are authorized to punish him, including sentencing him to jail. But because they know they cannot find me guilty, they want to get rid of me through the back door. And I'm saying, no, I want to face you in court.
This whole thing by NASA, you don't see it as a provocation of the government?
We are asserting our rights under Article 1 of the Constitution, sovereignty of the people. The people elected Raila Amolo Odinga as their president, and Uhuru Kenyatta stole that election in broad daylight. The people have the right to get that power back.
Miguna Miguna is the deported lawyer for Kenyan opposition leader Raila Odinga. You are speaking with me from Toronto, Canada. Sierra Leone's opposition National Grand Coalition has issued a manifesto ahead of the country's March 7th presidential elections. The party says the compact, as it is called, represents its agenda for job creation and national prosperity. The party also said the manifesto represents its motto of putting country and people first. Sulema Banja Tijanse is the campaign manager for National Grand Coalition presidential candidate Kande Yomkela. He tells me the five pillars of the manifesto, when implemented, will bring change to the lives of Sierra Leoneans irrespective of their backgrounds.
Our manifesto 2018 is aptly titled An Agenda for Job Creation and National Prosperity. And attached to that manifesto is our compact with the people of Sierra Leone. And that compact is between the National Grand Coalition, NGC, and the people of Sierra Leone. It's the five components that form the foundation blocks on which, together with all the citizenry, we will build the changed Sierra Leone that we've all been longing for. Our aim, as everybody knows in Sierra Leone, is to transform the country into a land of hope and opportunity.
You have an expanding economy that will create jobs for all, especially the youth, women, and people with disabilities, where the rule of law applies equally to the poor as well as to the rich, where citizens will actively participate in key decisions affecting their lives. If you talk to the current government, they will say that they are already doing these things.
The current government cannot say they are already doing these things. Sierra Leone's economy is dependent on our mineral resources. It has been since independence. We are saying that we hope and we pray and we aspire and we are going to expand the economy, an economy that will create jobs for all. But as we said in our compact, especially the youth, women, and people with disabilities, these are groups that have been marginalized over the years. These are groups that we are going to put at the center of our development aspiration. And today, everybody knows that Sierra Leone is at the most lawless state that it has ever been since independence. And the rule of law, we all know, has not been equally applied. So we are saying that we are going to ensure that the rule of law applies equally to each and everybody in our society, whether poor or rich. We are saying here that we are going to allow the citizenry to actively participate in key decisions that will affect their rights and their lives. And these have been absent in our society since independence. We are bringing in things that we have not considered over the years as essential in our development plan. We are saying here in our compact that public servants, for the first time, would be accountable to all citizens and at all times. We are saying here in our compact with the people of Sierra Leone that our natural resources will be harnessed for sustainable development of the country and for the benefit of all its citizens. And lastly, we are saying in this compact that we would ensure transparency, accountability, and the timely access to accurate and actionable data and information. These are issues that every party over the years have put in their manifestos. But these are issues that none of them have addressed. And we are going to address them. Sierra Leone is in its current state because of implementation. In the past, we've had fine words, but no action. We are going to make sure that we translate our manifesto into an action plan that we would enforce within the 5 years we're in power.
When you talk about an efficient, independent, and effective judiciary that will be at the center of the fight against corruption, I wonder what you make of the current government's stance when it comes to the fight against corruption?
It has been lopsided, and it has, for the best part, been lip service. Definitely, we've had arrests of public officials for corrupt practices. But these officials are today holding public offices, which make nonsense of the whole fight against corruption. We've had ministers who have been incarcerated, charged to court, and found guilty of corruption, only for those ministers to be free on appeal, to be set free on appeal, and for those very ministers to be given different appointments as ambassadors or even as ministers. So we believe that over the years, the fight against corruption has neither been genuine nor has it been sincere.
The last time we spoke, someone had challenged the candidacy of your standard bearer because of dual citizenship. They had gone to court. What is the status?
Well, they are in court and the process is on. But we believe that the case of the plaintiff is very, very weak. We do not believe that any court would entertain that application because the application itself has no merit. As far as we're concerned, it's vexatious and it's an abuse of the process.
Sulema Banja Tijan says the campaign manager for Sierra Leone's opposition National Grand Coalition presidential candidate, Kande Yomkela. You're speaking with me from the capital, Freetown. Today's Wednesday, February 14th, and you're listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Barton in Washington. Daybreak Africa time is now 17 minutes past the hour. The head of the Church of Uganda says religious leaders will continue to discuss national affairs, including politics. Archbishop Stanley Ntangale says the clergy are even willing to meet with President Yoweri Museveni to further discuss such issues. President Museveni over the weekend expressed concern about what he called the tune of religious leaders on national issues after a certain bishop asked the president to consider retiring. Mugumi Davis Rakerinch reports from Kampala.
While addressing journalists in Kampala this Tuesday about General Wuma Day, Ntagal said church leaders are simply God's messengers who have an obligation to deliver his message.
Religious leaders are prophets, and they will continue to use their prophetic voice. I want to assure you we pray for the leadership of the country because we know leadership comes from God. We shall always exercise our prophetic ministry to do what the Lord wants us to do.
General Wuma Day is celebrated in remembrance of the slain Archbishop Luwum, who was a leading voice in criticizing the excesses of the then president of Uganda, Idi Amin Dada. In 1977, Archbishop Luwum delivered a note of protest to dictator Idi Amin Dada against policies of arbitrary killings and unexpected disappearances. Simply afterwards, the archbishop and other leading churchmen were accused of treason and consequently murdered, although the government claimed the archbishop had died in a car accident. President Museveni over the weekend expressed concern over the tone of religious leaders on national issues after the bishop of Rwenzori Diocese, Reuben Kisembo, asked the president to consider retiring. Ntagale says the bishop was simply doing his job. He says religious leaders are actually selected to meet with the president to discuss issues of national importance.
We pray for our president, and we, as he mentioned in the photo, we are going to have time together and we shall talk in that mood. So he has invited us and we are going to talk. So that's what I can say on that at this moment. But we shall always pray for the leadership and use our prophetic voice as people who have been mandated by God to speak prophetically.
In his New Year address, President Museveni criticized religious leaders, saying that they had decided to focus on issues outside their mandate. Various religious leaders made comments about the Constitution Amendment Bill, commonly known as the Presidential Age Limit Bill, with some asking the president not to accent to the bill. Speaking of the same event, Father Reverend Simon Rokodo, Uganda's Minister of Ethics and Integrity, said there is no tension between the president and religious leaders.
If there is any government that has a cordial, harmonious relationship between church and state, it is this one. If there is any listening president to any person of any caliber, and more so to persons who are elevated by their call to perform the prophetic role, it is the current government.
Both Archbishop Ntagali and Minister Lokodo did not say when the expected meeting between the church leaders and the president will take place. For VOA News, I am Mugume, Davis Ruakarinji in Kampala, Uganda.
South Sudan's high-level revitalization forum, which is currently going on in Ethiopia's capital, Addis Ababa, was said to be facing some challenges yesterday amid boycott by opposition groups. The talks are being sponsored by the regional group Intergovernmental Authority on Development, also known as IGAD. Pagan Amum is the leader of the former South Sudan, Sudan People's Liberation Movement, detainees, who are also part of the discussion to revive the collapsed 2015 peace deal.
The parties are engaged in consultations with the facilitators and the mediation. They are also engaging each other, and tomorrow there will be a meeting that will be organized by South Sudanese themselves, among themselves, and they will be discussing all these issues, particularly to focus on how to bring peace to our country. In addition to the meetings of the committee, the subcommittee on the security arrangement and the permanent ceasefire, which is going on.
There are reports that the parties at the talks are not making any progress. Can you give us a list of the issues that have been agreed upon so far?
Progress that is made, but for example, we have discussed and agreed on the principles and declaration of principles. It has been signed by all the parties, with exception of the government delegation, who have reservations on one article, which is Article 28 in the Declaration of Principles. We hope they will overcome that and sign it. The discussions also continued on Chapter 1, and there has been agreement on a number of areas, like the reform in the judiciary, with the agreement to establish an independent constitutional court. But there are still very serious outstanding issues in Chapter 1 related to the transitional governance arrangement that include the transitional government, the transitional legislature, which are still outstanding. We are expecting the mediation or the facilitation to put forward a proposal based on the discussion that has been made by the parties. The general situation is that the process is going very slow. There is a lot of outstanding issues, actually all the main outstanding issues, the issues that keep the country trapped in this cycle of violence, are still not yet overcome.
Yes, Pagan, let's talk about individuals who are blocking the road to peace, because the Declaration of Principles stated clearly that individuals who block the road to peace will be punished. Are there individuals who are blocking the road to peace in Addis, and would you name them?
There is the agreement that any individual or groups that block peace must be punished, and this agreement is shared by all the parties, even though the government is having reservations, but they are agreeing that there must be consequences for obstructing the peace process.
That was Pagan Amum, the leader of the former Sudan People's Liberation Movement, detainees. He was speaking from Addis Ababa with John Tanza of VOA South Sudan in Focus program. Guinea-Bissau residents are decrying recent deaths at the hands of Senegalese authorities along their shared border. This week, the movement of conscious and non-conformist citizens tried to protest at the Senegalese embassy in Bissau, but were blocked by police. A spokesperson for the group, Carlos De Silva, tells Ricky Schreier they will continue to speak out about the killings, at least one of which was believed to be connected to timber smuggling.
We are protesting against some attitude that Senegalese authority has been taking during this couple of months. 6 months ago, they have beaten a deputy of National Assembly of Guinea-Bissau in the border. And then that passed, they killed three Bissau Guinean in the border.
Why did they say they had killed them? What happened?
You know, the three people they killed, they say they were involved in wood smuggling.
They were involved in wood smuggling,
yeah,
they said?
Yeah, that's it.
But that's not really a legal excuse to kill someone.
No, it's not legal. You know, we have a legal procedure. You can detain a person and then take him to the court. You know, this is the way.
Did they shoot them?
Yeah, they shoot them. They shoot them. And also, weeks ago, they killed one Bissau Guinean again.
Which border is that at? What town?
Tabu. Yeah, east, yes, exactly. Just a week ago. Yeah, they killed because these people, they were going to attend a religious ceremony, and then they told them to pay, each car must to pay 2,000 of francs CFR. But normally, those people going to attend this religion ceremony and the other things like that, they do not pay. And those people say, no, we're going to attend a religion ceremony, we cannot pay, you know. And the discussion broke out, and then they took the gun and they started shooting on people, you know, and they killed one person and the other injuries, five injuries happened there.
Have they said they were going to take the case to court? Are they going to punish the officers involved? What steps has Senegal taken?
We really don't know what Senegalese authority the steps they have taken. Even our authorities, we don't know what step they have taken. But we as a movement, we think that's not fair.
That was Carlos De Silva, the spokesperson for the local group Movement of Conscious and Nonconformist Citizens. He was speaking to Ricky Stryak from Guinea-Bissau's capital, Bissau, in the dense tropical rainforest of Minkembe National Park in northern Gabon. Conservationists are hoping a new weapon can help them win the war against elephant poaching. Viewers Maria Mandialo reports.
Conservationists in Gabon have started using the global positioning system real-time tracking devices on elephants to protect them against poachers.
We realized 20 years ago there was a growing pressure on elephants linked to the ivory trafficking of this species to Asian countries, for the most part Vietnam, Thailand and China.
Trying to put a tracker on a 5-ton animal is not an easy task. Each elephant is located and drugged temporarily so the GPS can be attached. The whole process takes about 10 minutes. Parfendong Ondo from Gabon's National Parks Agency explains how the system works.
The operations center here allows us to be in contact with field teams. At the same time, it allows us to track the movement of elephants with collars.
Just 10 years ago, experts say, Gabon's elephant population was one of the largest in Central Africa at 45,000.
It is estimated that between 10,000 and 15,000 elephants have been lost in the Minkembe Park in Gabon, which is a staggering number.
As the fight against poachers continues in Gabon and elsewhere, law enforcement agencies are trying to figure out who fatally stabbed a top investigator into the illegal ivory and rhino horn trade, who was recently found dead in his Nairobi home. Mariama Diallo, VOA News.
Briefly before we leave you, a summary of African news. Sierra Leone's opposition National Grand Coalition has issued a manifesto ahead of the country's March 7th presidential election. The party says the compact, as it is called, represents its agenda for job creation and national prosperity. And that is it for this Wednesday, February 14th edition of Daybreak Africa. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa crew, I'm James Barton, Washington, wishing every one of you in Africa a very good Wednesday.
Hello, this is Shaka Sali, host of Straight Talk Africa.
On the next Straight Talk Africa, we'll speak with Bobby Wine, the outspoken Ugandan member of parliament, is a businessman, activist, humanitarian, and musician. His lyrics often advocate for Uganda's struggling and poor. Bobby Wine joins host Shaka Sali to discuss his role as an artist in African politics.
Tune in Wednesdays at 18:30 UTC right here on VOA Africa.